Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Film Review podcast, in which we talk to documentary maker Morgan Spurlock about his search for Osama bin Laden. The movie is called, logically, Where in the World is Osama bin Laden? I talked to him and also to one of the experts interviewed for the movie, Michael Scheuer, who used to be the head of the CIA's bin Laden unit.
Mike, you still on the phone?
Yes, sir, I am.
Hey, how are you?
Very good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very great. Good to talk to you.
Now you interviewed Michael Morgan.
We did.
For this movie.
We did. It was a great interview, and it was so nice of Mike to play along. You know, the goal for me with our film is to try and engage, you know, a different kind of audience than is normally, you know, the people who absorb a tremendous amount of media or understanding what happens in the Middle East. And Mike played along with us, and we did a great interview with him because he is our kind of deep throat. He was giving us all of the history of the background of Osama and why we didn't catch him. And so we interviewed him in the basement, in the parking garage, actually, of the Watergate Hotel, where we recreated all the president's men shot for shot as we went in and talked to him. And we had his scene in the movie all the way up until we were finishing it for the Sundance Film Festival. But what you hear over the course of Mike's interview is so much of the stuff that you see me discover over the film. And so we ultimately cut it out. But you'll be on the DVD, Mike. Yeah. DVD extra. Bonus feature.
Morgan and his staff were very kind. The last thing I can do is act in this world. And they were very kind to me that day.
But it was such a great interview, Michael. You're not in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, it was too good. It was too good. I mean, one of the basic things he talks about is that, you know, I've been listening to the interview, is a lot of the things that we've heard over the course of this conversation, where you know, you see me learn about U.S. foreign policy. You see me learn about the dictatorial regimes that are supported overseas. You see the co-opting of the religion, you know, by a very small minority. And those are things that I think are much more natural to kind of see come out over the course of the journey.
Michael, just before you leave us, do you see, I mean, it does seem, as you keep talking about the Washington establishment, how there isn't a nickel's worth of difference between any of the presidential candidates. Therefore, following your analysis, that march towards hell, as you have it, is going to continue.
It will, sir. I think,
what for America and the rest of the world?
Well, it means continuing trouble. I think, you know, there's every chance, for example, that the neocons will try to get the president to act if Lebanon continues to fall apart, because they'll blame the Iranians for what's going on there. I've become rather pessimistic, sir. I think that the only thing that's going to change American foreign policy is another attack by al-Qaeda in the United States, which kills tens of thousands of people. Because then it's going to become apparent to Americans that their government has deliberately misled them over the course of the last 30 years and has put us in a place where we are very insecure in terms of defending ourselves.
Just before you go, Michael, you might have heard in the bulletin in the news bulletin about Hezbollah seizing large areas of Beirut. I know this isn't particularly your speciality. Your take on what's going on there?
I would just be very worried at this point. We have backed, we in the your government and the European Union have backed Hariri to the hilt so far, and it's going to be very quickly identified by the people around President Bush and Mr. McCain as an effort by Syria and Iran to try to take over Lebanon. And so I think the chance for a much bigger problem for the world in Lebanon is very, very much on the horizon.
Michael, appreciate you talking to us. Thank you. And because this was live, you can't be cut out the way Morgan has done on his movie.
You're very kind, sir. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Morgan.
Take care, Mike. Bye-bye.
Okay. Michael Scheuer, thank you. Marching Toward Hell, America and Islam After Iraq is the book. Noises off from Mark Kerman, who shuffles in as well.
It wasn't noises off. That was, you know, an intelligent. I was just saying, you can cut him out on the pocket because, as we all know, we've all done jobs so well that we've been completely cut out at the end. That's what they always tell me. Your thing is, you're too good for it.
If you want pictures, by the way, all this is now being live streamed. From now on, basically, to the end of the program. So you can watch via the website. You go to our homepage and you click.
Well, if I'd known that, I'd have
watch
put pants
now.
On.
Watch now is the bit that you're looking for.
I was just saying on the subject of that, because I haven't met Morgan before, but of course Morgan just outside came up and shook my hand and said, hello, I'm Morgan Spurlock. And if you're watching on the live stream, of course, nobody else looks like that. It's, you know, it's like one of those, yes, everyone knows that's who you are. So,
yep, because if you're watching, that Mark is the guy who looks as though it's 1955. And
thank you very much. I take that as the highest form of compliment.
Morgan looks as though he's out of the village people.
That's right.
And I embrace that as well.
Around the world.
That's exactly right.
But in this movie, shockingly, turns into a full beard.
It does turn into a very full, very grisly man-ish, you know, Taliban-ish beard.
So explain why you end up with a new movie we talked about Super Size Me, a very big impact. It's this similar style. You are a kind of, you're making a documentary. It's very much revolved around you and your partner and the impending birth of your new child. And but why would you go off looking for the world's most wanted terrorist?
Well, I mean, I think that anyone who's a parent, you know, has this idea of or this question of what kind of a world am I about to bring a kid into? And, you know, in the United States, wondering where Osama is something we've all been asking for 7 years now. And I think, you know, as we started to dive into this film, we were already talking about making this movie when we found out my wife was going to have a baby. And believe me, there was a real hold the phone moment of her saying, is this really the smartest thing to do? And should you be traipsing off through Afghanistan and Pakistan while I'm pregnant? And the more she and I talked about it, the more she became very supportive of, you know, kind of really starting to create something that we could all look at and understand what, you know, kind of what kind of world we're giving to our children. I thought that was really beautiful and, you know, God bless her for it.
Yes.
Because you really didn't want to go to the antenatal classes, though, did you? That's the thing. I'm just going to go anywhere than sit down in the group and say, well, the way I feel about this is...
Did you go to those classes?
Oh, heavens, yes.
No, I did.
Oh. Of course
no,
I did.
My favourite moment was all lying down on the ground, and the woman who was running it said, I want you to get in touch with your cervix. That's what... Look, you weren't there. You don't know. No, that's what she said to
that's
me.
That's because she didn't realise that you were a man. What they did is go down inside and say hello to the unwatched. I think they're wonderful. I think they're absolutely wonderful. I think the NCT is a fabulous organisation.
I miss them.
At this point, Morgan is thinking, what the hell have I got involved with? You know, I've gone all over the world making this movie and we're talking about NCT classes.
Yeah, well, we had our baby at home in a birthing tub. You know, believe me and my hippie wife can't really throw in our two cents too far.
And that's in the movie. Now, I've had... two kids born underwater.
Yeah.
And I'm saying the very last thing I'd have wanted is cameras in there. What kind of an understanding partner do you have?
Oh, she's the
greatest.
We're
making a movie, and when you give birth, we're going to be in that bathing tub with you. No, thank you.
Yeah, well, she was against it up until
up
until we got back. And then she was like, yeah, I want you to film it. I want you to film the whole thing. And so here we are filming her birth in high definition for 8 hours of...
So Michael Scheuer gives you a great interview, and you cut him out, and then your wife... giving birth, that's in.
There's a lot more commitment to giving birth versus a great interview.
But you also have in the film, you have the moment in which she holds up the pregnancy test.
Yeah.
Now, my assumption was, that's clearly faked. You can't possibly have been running a camera at the moment in which your partner came into the room and said, Morgan, you never guess what?
Well, yeah.
You're going to hear the pitter-patter of tiny feet.
Because actually, when she told me, you know, that was the one thing in the film that we reshot, because when she told me that, like, I woke up in bed and she rolled over and she's like, how are you? Good morning. We're going to have a baby. And then she holds up the one stick from out of the covers. And I'm like, oh, but that's only one test. You might be wrong. She pulls out like five more sticks. And I was like, oh, well, there you go then. Looks like we're going to have a baby.
So hang on, honey. I'm just going to get the high definition camera.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
You know what? That'll work.
Yeah.
So where in the world is Osama bin Laden is the title of the movie? But you're not really looking for him. You didn't go off, although you do mention this a couple of times. You know, you do ask people where he is. This is not a serious attempt to find out where he is.
Well, I think that, you know, when we first went into this, we knew that it was going to be... The odds of finding somebody like an Osama bin Laden were so incredibly slim. You know, you talk about nil. Yeah, it's like buying a lotto ticket. You know, we didn't go in saying, well, we're not going to win the lotto, but you know, we knew it's like 20 million to 1. So you know, so for me, we went in with the real idea that the journey was going to be the more interesting possibilities of what we could uncover. And for me, that's really what's the most fascinating thing: the people we meet, the places we go, the things that we talk about with them. And I think it makes for a very powerful film.
And just explain the style of the movie. There are sections which it's animation. It's like a video game, basically.
Yeah.
And laugh out loud moments with a dancing Osama bin Laden.
Yeah.
Well, it was terrific.
Oh, thanks. Well, I mean, the goal for me was, much like Super Size Me, we tried to, you know, use humor to deal with a very serious issue in a way that would make it very accessible, engaging, entertaining. And people went to see Super Size Me who'd never even seen a documentary before. You know, there were cinema owners that booked Super Size Me that never even shown a cinema in the theater. And so the goal for me with this film was to still try and tap into a very general audience, as broad an audience as possible, you know, people who've kind of disconnected from this conversation and get them, you know, back in.
Do you think that there will be a different reaction in Europe to this picture than in the United States, where, and I'm speaking in broad generalizations here, we get a lot of this stuff.
You know,
we've seen a lot of this slightly more nuanced foreign coverage than maybe is presented on American television. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that you're right to the one aspect that I think there's more people here who are connected in, and I think there's a very simple reason for that. When you live in Europe, you know, when you live in the United States, you live a very isolated existence from surrounding countries. You know, we're in Europe, you know, it's like me getting into a car driving from New York to New Jersey is, you know, like you being able to go to Paris. You know, you're automatically connected to other cultures, other languages, other people, so you have a much larger knowledge of just the people people who surround you as foreigners. And so for us, we don't have that idea. You know, Canada and Mexico, not quite so close and not quite the same. And I think that, you know, that there's plenty of people who over here, much like with Super Size Me, will go to this film, will learn something new, will find different things out. And, you know, while as an American, the people that I see in this film aren't the people that I see in the media. You know, when I turn on the television set, I see people burning flags and screaming bloody murder and death to America. But that's really not who this film really shows or the majority of the people overseas.
But I think that is a crucial difference. And I think it's not just to do with geography. I think it is to do with, you know, I know we're on the BBC, but it is to do with organizations like the BBC, which, I mean, it is amazing for a British person when you go to America and you turn on the news. And it is just like the most unbelievably, it's not even nuanced with a political slant. It is literally like, here is the official line. And at the end of the program, we'll have a little bit of world news, which, as you say, shows you some pictures from around the country of people burning your flag.
Yeah, and it's very small. It's like 90 seconds of world news coverage. And if America is not involved or it doesn't really affect America, you really don't even talk about it.
Morgan Spurlock is here talking dietary tips to Mark.
Well, I was just saying, because it's funny, we bought Morgan's partner's book, which is basically...
She's a vegan chef.
She's a vegan chef, and it was the detox diet that she put me on after the McDonald's diet.
Yeah. And there's two things that she says in it that sort of really resonated. The first one was, I know everyone's drink more water. And it says, look, you know, you need to drink more water, because basically water will make you feel better. And then the other, there's a bit in which says, you know, the next time you think you want a cup of coffee, don't have the cup of coffee, try a glass of water instead. And much as I am addicted to the great god caffeine, it is true. And as a result of it, I have massively increased my H2O.
And as both of us are sitting here drinking cups of coffee.
Yeah,
right,
so thanks very much for the...
You said you've renounced sodas as a result of this.
Yeah, if I drink one soda a week, it's probably surprising. I try not to drink any sodas. Because you're basically drinking your calories. You're basically just drinking sugar and corn syrup.
What if you have one with no calories?
Well, then they've got, you know, napalm in them. That's how they get the calories out, basically.
Okay, we're slightly off target here. Where do you start your search for Osama bin Laden, Morgan?
Hey, well, we started, in the United States doing some basic training.
He wasn't there, though, was he?
He's not there. No. You know? Although people in the United States says, well, you got to check the White House. You might be in a room in the basement. You know, that's what folks said before we left. And then we start heading overseas. You know, and I wrote a book that's a companion piece to the film. And in the book, we actually came to Europe. You know, we came to the United States. We came to the UK, Ireland, and then France before we headed off to the first country you see in the film, which is Egypt.
You went to Leeds, didn't you?
We went to Leeds. We went up to Dublin and Derry, where we went and met Martin McGuinness there and spoke to him.
Did he know where Osama bin Laden was?
He didn't, but we wanted to kind of speak to someone who was once, you know, labeled a terrorist for a long time before we dove into the deep end of the terrorist pool, you know, over in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And so then we moved on to Egypt and Morocco to get a sense of the things that pushed people towards following him, what shaped his ideology. Israel, the Palestinian territories, which he says is a big cornerstone of why, you know, Al-Qaeda continues to do what it does. Saudi Arabia, where he was born, and then ultimately Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Okay. Saudi Arabia plays a key part in this story, both globally and in your movie. Here's a little clip from Morgan's movie when he's in Saudi.
There isn't much room for moderates. There's no freedom of speech or freedom of the press. Just speaking up or writing anything critical of the royal family is illegal, and public protest is actually forbidden. The Ministry of Information monitors the web for any immoral content, but websites supporting Al-Qaeda seem to get through just fine.
What do the fundamentalists hope to achieve?
Power. Yeah. In the name of God. That's where I don't like it. They manipulate the Islamic teachings to fit different situations, different conditions, to ultimately lead them to power.
Yeah.
I don't think a religious person, be it Christian or Jewish or a Muslim, by his own upbringing and teaching, is qualified to be a public official. It's just not. Politics completely different from religion. And I don't think any religious person is qualified to be a public official. A good amount of secularism in every Arab political system is badly needed. Drawing clear lines between where an imam, a priest, role or responsibility ends, and a politician or a public official responsibility begins, we need it for stability.
And we see Morgan when you're in Saudi. Was it Chop Chop Square?
We're in Chop Chop Square, yeah, right in the middle of Riyadh, where they still publicly assassinate people. You know, most recently, it's mostly drug smugglers who end up getting killed there.
And you stand above the drain.
You stand above the drain. It's right in the middle, right outside of the office they call the White House, which is the Matawa's headquarters in the middle of Riyadh. And so right out in the middle of this square, Chop Chop Square, there's a drain where they chop people's heads off and the blood flows down into the drain, and they do the executions in the morning. And in the afternoon, as the sun comes out, kids play football right in the middle of Chop Chop Square.
These are our allies.
Yeah, exactly.
Where do you go from Saudi?
From Saudi, we head on into Afghanistan and start to kind of get a sense of what's happened, you know, post 9/11, post the invasion, and even give a little bit of history of kind of what's led up to that. You know, I mean, this is a country that's so war torn, and you go there, and you're walking in, you know, what's essentially a third world country. People still don't have running water; they still don't have electricity. When we went there in 2001, you know, the United States and overthrew the Taliban, there was so much hope, you know, people had there that things were going to be different, things were going to change. You know, we abandoned them after the Soviet Union fell, and they felt like, well, great, America's coming back. We're going to have schools. We're going to have medical clinics. Everything that we'd wanted in the past is finally going to happen. And now here we are 7 years later, and they feel like they're still stuck in
Charlie Wilson's war, exactly, of course, addressing
same thing.
Precisely those points. But were you ever really in danger? I mean, there's a sequence right at the end where you, again, not wanting to give the whole thing away, you're trying to work out whether to go into particular war-torn area, and you say, no, there's no point. I mean,
When we're at the border to head into the Pakistan, we're at the Pakistan border to head into the tribal areas, where there's multiple things why we didn't travel into that region, but I'll come back to that. The first, were we in danger? You know, we were embedded with the troops for about 2-3 weeks in Afghanistan, and when you're embedded with the troops, you are in a tremendous amount of danger, you know, because they're targets every day. You know, they're targeted by the Taliban, they're targeted by Al-Qaeda. While we're with them in the middle of the film, you see a Taliban ambush on the governor of that province's convoy. We basically are coming up as the Afghan National Army fires and kills one of the Taliban, a guy named Throat Cutter, who basically gained advancement in the Taliban by slitting his own brother's throat, you know, a very nasty person. So, I mean, when you're with them, there are real dangerous possibilities. And every time you go out with them is a day that something could go horribly wrong.
Mark, you wanted to come in there.
Well, I think here's the interesting thing from my point of view. Firstly, at the very end of the film, and actually I think one of the most powerful things of it, is there's this montage of almost everyone that you've interviewed smiling, which sounds like it could be the most, you know, cutesy thing. But in fact, because the message of the film is actually, in the end, they are just a bunch of people. Wherever you go, they are people. And what you've done is you've found more reasonable people than some people may expect, which I think is, you know, what I wonder is that since I think you're clearly a smart guy, and since you did find those people, I wonder how much the search for Osama bin Laden became, you know, a kind of something that you had to carry. Because there's bits of the movement, you know, you're talking to people and you're engaging with them and you're finding it interesting, particularly when they're talking about the situation Israel and Palestine, and people saying this whole conflict is being hijacked. We're not backing these people.
Yeah.
And yet you have to return to, I suppose, the crowd-pleasing gag about where is Osama bin Laden. And in fact, actually, for me, I could happily have lost that because it seems to me that it's like the joke is a way of getting you in.
Yeah.
But I think your interest is deeper than that. And I think after a while, you find yourself in shopping centre saying, where is he? It's kind of like, well, you almost can move on from that.
Yeah, I think for us, you know, and especially as we were traveling around, you know, what you start to see is that Osama bin Laden has become more than a man. I mean, he's an enigma. He's like Kaiser Soze in The Usual Suspects. You know, he's this guy who's everywhere and he's nowhere. And I think that's really what comes out in the film is you see his ideology, his teachings, his influence in Egypt, Morocco, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, you know, all the countries that we travel to. You continue to kind of see his voice and his vision, even though he isn't there. And I think for me, that's a consistent thread that we wanted to keep, you know, coming through the film.
And the other thing is, how did you feel about what happened to you when you were in Israel? Because, I mean, that's a very tense. There's one point in which you actually sort of get smacked around a little bit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, tell me about that, because that's almost the sort of edgiest part. It's like you've wandered into a situation, you're not, from watching the film, you're not quite sure whether you understand exactly why they're being that hostile towards you. What's all that about?
Well, the biggest thing, which because even our producer, who basically ended up calling the police in, he's like, it's going to be fine. We'll go in there, we'll do an interview. I talk to people here all the time, and then we'll go grab some lunch. It was going to be just an afternoon man on the street vox pop day. And it escalates incredibly quickly, and
completely wrong-footed, because you don't expect this to happen.
Oh, of course not. Nobody does. And so so quickly they start yelling at us, screaming at us, becoming violent with us. But for me, the most beautiful part about that scene is the guy who is so concerned about how I'm perceiving the situation, you know, that he comes up to me and he goes, what you see here, most of us, we don't think like them. And there's a great parallel of perception between that one guy who's talking about the 5 or 6 people who are really vocal and violent against the rest of the movie and the places that we travel to. And that's something we don't get to see, just like you say.
But that I think is actually, in the end, the heart of it. I think this Osama bin Laden stuff, you know, I can live with that. I think that's the heart of it, is finding those people who say, actually, they don't represent us. Those people don't represent it. And go wherever you go, you find pretty much another version of that same person. That's why I say that when you end up with that montage of people smiling, which, honestly, if somebody had suggested that in the editing room, you would have said, no, out. That's a terrible, terrible idea. But in fact, in the context of what the documentary is talking about, I think that is justified.
So some of the people who criticised the movie, Morgan, have made, extrapolating from what Mark is saying, say that there's an element to which it's like an old-fashioned Coca-Cola commercial. You know, it ends up by saying, you know what, underneath it all, we're all the same.
But you know
and if only
we
could all get on with each other, wouldn't we be better off?
Well, there's something very simple. People say it's so simple. You know, it's like we break down a lot of the ideas that push people towards, you know, fundamental ideology over the course of this film. And then, you know, they say, well, it's so easy. It's just like, oh, that we all just need to talk to each other and communicate and it'll make things better. Sometimes I think you just need to show that, you know, we can't see the forest for the trees. And what I say to those people who said, yeah, well, and in case you forgot, fast food's bad for you. You know, Supersize Me did a great job of making something that, oh, we all know that, you know, accessible once again and making us see it in a different way. And I think this film does the same thing. I think people, you know, love to jump on a bandwagon of bashing something, what somebody else does. I think people love to kind of, you know, tie the rope around something when it's already being drawn tight. I think audiences love the film. I think the audiences who've seen the film have overwhelmingly had positive, you know, responses to the movie. And I encourage anybody who saw Supersize Me that liked Supersize Me will like this film.
It is absolutely true as well that it would be impossible for anyone to see Supersize Me and go out and say, although you said that afterwards you had a craving for a Big Mac, but it would be almost impossible to come out of that film and say, you know, I really want a burger and fries.
Well, there were two camps. There were the people who saw Supersize Me who said, I'm never going again. But then there were people who walked out and said, I got to go get one right now.
And you did actually change their policy, because it was as a result of that film. They used references to that film in the publicity over here saying, we're changing, everything's changing. We're going to have salads. We're going to introduce pedometers. Everyone's going to be fit. And I've never seen a multi-million-dollar corporation react like that to a movie before.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online
bbc.co.uk/5live.